We're back. Edward Lengel is our guest. I'm Paula Gordon, Bill Russell. You were just asking of Edward Lengel, how do you get to enough?
Well, I mean, this is part of the learning that should be going on in these things.
And well, carried forward to the moment.
There is an encouraging subplot, which is in the book, which is that as the battle progresses, on the ground, the individual doughboys and their junior officers in particular learn and adapt and begin to develop their own tactics and their own methods of dealing with the war, which are far superior to what their generals are telling them. So that, you know, in a way, they start fighting their own war. They start improvising. And also learning sometimes from French advisors about how to fight. So that once you get toward November 1918,
And this starts in September, so it's a matter of days and weeks.
Right, and in particular with the veteran units. The veteran units are much more adept at handling this kind of combat, and they are able to reduce casualties. They're able to fight in a more intelligent way. The problem is, part of the problem with this battle, at the beginning of the battle, is that almost all of the divisions that were put into this battle were completely green, completely inexperienced.
Straight off the farm.
Right, straight off the farm, literally.
Or Manhattan.
Or straight out of Manhattan, straight out of Chicago, and places like that. Really, all segments of society, a large proportion were immigrants, many of whom spoke English barely, if at all. So these are guys, you know, who have no experience of fighting, have no idea what it's like, neither do their officers, and they do what they're told. They follow their orders, you know, they're brave. Incredibly brave, very patriotic. They believe in what they're fighting for. They believe in their buddies, especially, which really is why men fight. As they fight for their comrades. And they keep attacking and attacking and attacking. But as time goes on, even those who went into the battle as green troops really begin to develop their own methods and styles of fighting.
There's another piece of this that we haven't talked about. Two pieces, really. One is the weather. And the other is the logistics. I'm accustomed to thinking of the First War as trench warfare, and people would get up out of the trenches and go get themselves killed, and then they get thrown back or not. That part, you know, was not terribly surprising. The absolute failure of the logistics, or close to failure, breakdown of the supply system of the American Expeditionary Force, I found remarkable. And again, it's understandable because they had a million troops. They didn't have any experience, but they were unable to get food. They were unable to get ammunition. They were
water.
I mean, these people, you know, having launched these attacks in many cases, with suffering severe casualties, wounded and dead. The wounded could not be evacuated. They got no food. They got no warmth. They were soaked to the skin. They had no shelter. And they ran out of ammunition.
And then there was the influenza that comes on top of all of that.
Right, have a nice day.
Yeah, but we're used to thinking of the American soldiers as being the best supplied soldiers in the world. They always have enough of everything, enough food, you know, enough clothing, and everything else. And in this war, in this battle,
in
particularly, oh, that's true. And Iraq is different. But just thinking, you know, in terms of, you know, World War II, you know, or even Vietnam. I mean, in terms of, you know, their, you know, that they had generally the senses, enough food and enough water and everything, even though the combat conditions were horrendous.
Well, in Vietnam, the one thing that the Army did extraordinarily well was to evacuate wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the real horrors of one of many, but I think, you know, probably the greatest is all the soldiers on all sides, but specifically the Americans, who were wounded and were left sometimes for days, sometimes, I guess, some probably for weeks, before they either die or find their own way back or just suffer.
Right.
And it's appalling.
Right, right.
And the attempts to deal with it didn't seem substantive.
There are many aspects to it. One of them is incompetence, lack of training. Another is the fact that the Americans decided to create their divisions twice as large as the European divisions. So you have a division in a certain small area, and it's just terribly difficult to supply. But it's remarkable also that the army was there to fight at all, because essentially they had just finished another battle, San Miguel, which wasn't much of a battle, but it, you know, they had to fight there. Then they were shifted in a period of 2 weeks to a completely different front. If George Marshall hadn't been able to accomplish that, they wouldn't have been there at all. But they did it in such a slapdash manner that they were just unprepared to go into that battle. You
know? There's a certain improvised quality to all of this that, I think it goes to that arrogance that because we're Americans, you know, all we have to do is show up. And if the Germans don't run just because we're there, then we'll just steamroll them.
And that really was the attitude. Bill is not making that up. That's more or less descriptive from moment to moment.
Well, I'm interpolating from what I read of your
book. But not much.
Right. Well, part of my, or really my, I should say, my main view in writing this book, you know, it's been written about a couple of times before, briefly.
The specific
battle. And World War I in general, it's always been looked at from the top down. What the generals were doing, what the politicians were doing. You know, we moved one division here, another division there, corps from here to there. You know, this attacked on that front and took that town. But there has been no attempt to look at this from the bottom up, what the individual soldiers were experiencing. And it's not as if there isn't source material. I mean, the source material is just incredibly rich, incredibly rich. Published and unpublished, the problem is that nobody looks at it. Nobody reads it. Nobody's interested, which to me is stunning. So, no, I try to look at, you know, what it was like for the individuals to come in. And they had a certain naivete. You know, I look at it from the point of view of the doughboys. Yes, they were naive. Yes, in many cases, they were arrogant. But they experienced firsthand what war was really like. And like all other soldiers too, throughout time, you know, they learned to adapt. They learned what war was truly about, and I have a tremendous sympathy, really, for them. That's really what the war is about,
and a personal sympathy as well.
Right,
and that is your cousin.
Right, Alvin C. York is my cousin.
That's right. And it's important because it grounds it in the personal and. As in most things in life, the personal is also the general. Forgive the double entendre there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Edward Lengel. We're talking about the First World War because America needs to do that, and the world needs to do that, and because we don't do it nearly enough, he says. He also says many other things in his eloquent book, To Conquer Hell. He's looking at the Meuse-Argonne campaign in 1918, and there's a great deal that and brings us into the present as well. Be with us when we return in a moment.